Right, well, now it's time to welcome my guests, Ken Porter and Stephen Wynn, who've got together to write a book about Billericay and the Great War. So, first off, welcome to both of you to Phoenix FM. And I guess that you're both local to the area, but what was it that encouraged you to write the book and about what must have been a pretty rural community when the First World War started? Who's going first?
Ken.
Right, Ken, off you go.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, I'm a local Langdon and Langdon Hills boy and lived, other than a short period, in the Basin area. Steve has been around and working since, I think, the early 60s. It was through a colleague a few years back when we suddenly found out that both of us were researching the history of a prisoner of war camp at Langdon Hills.
Oh.
So we decided to get together and write the book between us.
Now, the prisoner of war camp on Langdon Hills, that was Second World War, wasn't
it? That
is
Second World War, that's correct, yeah. Second World War, known as Hut 266.
Well, that's the book title, isn't
that
it?
That is the book title.
Quick plug.
Well, of course, it was published about a year ago and is still selling reasonably well.
Good stuff.
We're very pleased with it. But we suddenly found that we actually got on quite well together. So, we had a few meetings afterwards and discussed what we would like to do. And, of course, at that time, the World War One was fairly high on the agenda. And so we thought it'd be an idea if we look at the various villages around and the local area, and we've got a number of books in the pipeline on the First World War. Billericay is the first, and as you say, it was a local small village at the time, beginning to slowly expand, and it seemed an ideal one to start with.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I imagine that at the outbreak of the war, very little would have changed initially as far as daily outlet routines were concerned, but as time went on, especially after conscription was introduced in 1916, that the absence of farm labour would definitely have started to impact. Is that right?
I think initially it would have been the same all over the country. There wouldn't have really been too much, initially, too much sort of change. As time went on, though, that would have changed. That initial feeling of euphoria would have dissipated.
Yeah.
And then in different stages, the communities would have seen their menfolk enlisting, going off to war. Then as time went on into 1915, Billericay had its first casualty, so it becomes more real.
Hmm.
Then into 1916, you had the Military Services Act came in, which was about conscription, when single men between 18 and 41, unless they were widowed or with children or were of a religious order, had to sign up. Then in Billericay as well, you had the situation, the end of September, 24 September 1916, when the Zeppelin crashed. So all of a sudden it became very real. I think the people of Billericay were experiencing the war at first hand. Then, because of the amount of men that were going off to war, that was then left to the women who were left behind in the community to then do jobs that previously they'd have never had to have done, really. And a lot of that would have been within the labouring, farming community.
Now, am I right in saying that also a lot of horses were shipped off to, conscripted to the front, and therefore that would also have impacted things at home?
Absolutely. I think during the course of the war there was about 1 million horses that were sent over to France and other theatres of war, and out of them only something like 60,000 ever came back. So if you take away not only the menfolk, but the means by which, because in those days they were the tractors of today, so you take away the men and the horses, and that must have had an astronomical effect on
the
rural communities, which most places were in those days.
And how quickly would that have impacted, do you think? Or do you know?
I don't think there's a definitive answer to that, really, because I think it was a combination of different factors that added together, which actually just compounded the situation out of anybody's expectations, I think, really. So I think that would have, one would have affected, it would have been like a knock-on effect, like almost like a domino effect, if you will.
Well, if you'd lost both your manpower and your horses, then that must surely have impacted on food production. So would that not have resulted in rationing and all that sort of thing coming in?
It did, actually. Though food rationing didn't actually come in until 1918. Hmm. But on the initial outbreak of war, like any type of conflict like that, it was going to affect the country. There was a lot of panic buying.
I'll bet.
And shops were running out initially. Hmm. It did take a little while, but it did settle down after a while. Hmm. But by the time you got to April 1916, in theory, or we were told, there was only about 6 weeks of wheat left and bread was a staple diet. Mm. So there was a problem there. I'm not so sure how much the problem was when you took the local village areas. I think there was big problems in the city.
Yeah.
You take the local areas, certainly Billericay, you were having, and Basel as a whole, you had this development of the plotland type era they spoke about, where people had their own allotments, they had their gardens, they grew their own vegetables, they used to have goats, chickens, this sort of thing. So I don't think it hit them quite as hard. But of course, Winston Churchill said, whoever controls the high seas, right, will win the war.
Yep.
And though there were one or two small battles overseas, and the Germans did do reasonably well in that, we did manage to keep their boats right in port, shall we say, because we had the volume of ships. So the Germans come up with the U-boat campaign, and in 1917, you know, their idea was literally to attack any merchant ship that was going, which obviously did start to cause considerable problems. By the end of 1917, we tried voluntary rationing, didn't really work, and then in early 1918, we did find that we had to bring ration in, or the country brought rationing in, and most things were rationed towards the end of the war. But again, I haven't found, all the people I've interviewed who come back with family stories, I haven't found anybody who really talked too much about being overshort in the local areas. Cities, I've no doubt there was a tremendous problem.
Well, because presumably not just shortages, but there were, I would imagine that fuel was also rationed to move the material from the country into the
coal
city.
Coal was certainly rationed. And in late 1917, the government did take over to 2.5 million acres of farmland, and this is where then you got the land army, the Women's Land Army, come into the fore to work on the land. And there's no doubt that you know, we owe a great debt, I think, to our women folk.
I think
the amount of work they did. Of course, in Basel as well, in the Basel area, which is part of Billericay, down at down at Pitsea there, we had the explosive factory as well. So we got a lot of the local women, you know, working very hard on the First World
War. What else changed?
Well, I think, I suppose from a social perspective, things changed, because prior to the war, and I know I'm going to get shot down in flames for saying this, but it was factual, women had a structure or a part to play in the structure of society, if you will, whereby they were either a housewife, they were a shop assistant, they might have worked in a school. And I think there was a separation. There was women's work and there was men's work, and never the twain shall meet. But once the war started, that all changed. And as Ken has just said, they were started to work in munitions factories. They were certainly used on the land in farming. They were driving buses, taxis. So it totally changed, and I think with that there was a potential problem, because all of a sudden employers had seen a situation where they were now employing women to do what had previously been a man's job, and they were paying them less money. So I think there was a real concern amongst the unions that once the war was over, what was going to happen? All these men were going to come back from the war, but somebody wanted to make a quick buck might not re-employ these men. They might then keep employing the women because they could get their product out there cheaper because they weren't paying the women so much. So I think there was a lot going on in the background, although the women done an absolutely fantastic job, and the war was won on the home front as well as out in the theatres of war. But I think there was real concern amongst some of the unions in particular about what was going to happen afterwards.
Well, I imagine it would be. And of course, at that point, nobody could foresee what was going to happen with the flu outbreak and all the other things that were going to
absolutely
affect things. Now, you touched just now, Steve, on the incident concerning the Zeppelin coming down at Great Burst in 1960.
Yes.
Now, that was obviously a major incident for this area.
It was, and really, when you look back in history, it put Billericay on the map, because I think it's fair to say, to a large extent at that time, if the Zeppelin hadn't crashed where it had a done, nobody had heard of Billericay back in 1916.
Mm, mm.
So it would have been quite an anonymous place, but all of a sudden there was a big furore. There was people coming up from London, it was national news,
yeah.
There was photographs appearing. So all of a sudden, tiny little Billericay, Great Bursted, Little Bursted, mm. had gone from being this community that nobody outside of that immediate area knew about,
mm.
and it was thrust onto the national and international stage.
Mm, absolutely. Now, Ken, you mentioned at the outset about the other book that you've written about the prisoner of war camp that was set up during the Second World War in Langdon Hills. But I believe towards the end of the First World War that actually there was another German POW camp in Billericay itself.
There was
right?
a German, that's correct, in Billericay, to where Andrews Hospital is now, isn't it?
Andrews Hospital was, but it's now
was,
housing estate.
Say. It's now a housing right. estate, but there was also the workhouse. Oh, sorry, also the workhouse at that stage. And yes, the prisoners we did have in that particular area for a short period of time.
Mm.
There.
Now, the ironic thing is, I believe that one of the things that when you were researching this, that you actually found a very small pamphlet by a young girl about 6 years old. And she was the daughter of the guy that was in charge of the workhouse, which I think became the POW camp, is that right?
Yes, she was the lady's name escapes me at the moment, but she was the daughter of the master of the workhouse. And in those, during the war, there was lots of different locations that were used as in prisoner war camps. And it was the actual then what went on to be St Andrew's Hospital, which is now a very plush housing area in Billericay.
Yeah.
Was in the workhouse, and it was within the workhouse that these 40 German prisoners of war were actually held.
But curiously, she didn't actually mention it in...
No, she didn't, and the sort of the pamphlet booklet she wrote was very detailed. It really gave you a flavour of what the town and the community was
yeah.
like, very descriptive. But for some reason, and she would have been living with these
yes.
German prisoners of war, and within that, there is absolutely no mention whatsoever, which is quite intriguing, really.
Yeah, it very odd, very yeah. odd. Maybe she'd lost interest by that time of the end of the war, because she really kicked it off in 1914, I think, her first
absolutely.
So maybe by 1918 she...
But you yeah. would imagine, though, that yeah. for a little girl... young in age, I think she was only about 6 or 7, to
yeah.
have these German prisoners of war must have been very exciting, very interesting, because
yeah.
regardless of how they were portrayed in the national press, when you can then see them at first hand and they were just somebody else's son, brother, husband, they were just normal people.
Yes.
It must have been, it does seem strange now you mention it, that she didn't actually write about them.
Yeah. Now, okay, you've got to tell us what the book's called, what the price is going to be, and where you can get a copy of it. Who's going with that one?
Well, it's Billericay at the Great War.
Right.
It's through Amazon at the moment. We can get it. You know more than I
right.
do on this one, Steve.
Pen and Sword's website.
Yeah.
Right.
It's,
which is
www.pen-and-sword.co.uk.
Right.
The recommended retail price is $12.99. They've
yep.
got it on special offer at the moment for $10.99, although it is on sale on Amazon and in Waterstones in Basildon, but that'll actually be different prices.
Right. And do you want to plug your other book while you're at it?
We can plug the prisoner of war camp.
Well, yeah. Why don't you plug that as well? Go
yes,
on.
Yes, that's it's the German prisoner of war old POW book at Langdon Hills, 266. That
yeah.
is going out at $9.99 at the moment from
yes.
Waterstone and from Amazon.
Great stuff.
And we're quite pleased. It's a local book. It sold reasonably well. But in the very near future, the next one we have out is actually Langdon in the Great War.
Just showing off.
I hope before Christmas.
You are showing off now.
Before Christmas.
You've started him now.
Which yeah. will cover the majority of the other parishes, old parishes within the Basildon area.
Right, now obviously I can't comment on the one on Langdon or indeed on the Langdon Hills POW camp, but I have to say that the book that we've been talking about today, Billericay and the Great War, has to be essential reading for anyone interested in local history. And I'd like to thank both of you for coming in today and talking and telling us all about it.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you
very much.
We will of course post all the details on the 123 show page and the Phoenix FM, which is of course on the Phoenix FM website, a bit later today. And I hope the project, or all the projects that you're involved in, continue to go well for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.